Okay, let's go.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, July 30th, 2019. The time is 5:42, present are myself, Commissioner Nevins, Commissioner Phillips, Commissioner Shattuck. We are awaiting Commissioners Murphy, Buskirk, and Eliason. So we'll defer a motion to excuse until a little bit later on the agenda. We'll begin with introductions. My name is Kim Allen. I am Planning Commissioner for South Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Joe Franks, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Okay. Moving on to item B, which is the adoption of the agenda. Do we have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, changes? All right. All those in favor of adopting the agenda, signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? And it passes unanimously. Moving on to item C. We'll do these one at a time. We have approval of the minutes. We have, although the agenda lists minutes from four meetings, we will be taking up April 16th, May 14th, and May 21 only. The minutes for July 2nd will be deferred to the next meeting. So we'll start with the April 16th, 2019 minutes. Do we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve the April 16th minutes.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion, changes, corrections? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of April 16th, 2019, signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. Moving on to May 14th, 2019, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll move for approval.
Second.
Okay, any discussion, changes, corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for May 14th, 2019, signify by raising hands, saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, passes unanimously. Moving on to the minutes from May 21st, 2019, do we have a motion to approve?
I'm going to approve the May 21st minutes.
Okay, a second?
Second.
All right. Any discussion, changes, or corrections?
Just that I prefer to keep that set of minutes on top if you have a copy and have a question about it later, but it's not a correction or anything, just a question about the content.
Okay. Do you want to discuss that now? Or?
Well, actually,
I have a copy if you need it.
What caught my eye was,
she's got a paper copy here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, way in the back. Actually, the question, I prefer not to talk about it now because it's an pertinent discussion about ADUs in the rural area and a suggestion that and a suggestion generally about getting rid of conditional use permits for making things flow easier. So I want to talk about that. It's a serious issue. It's going to take time.
Okay, so you would like to flag that for later discussion?
Yes, later.
Not later as part of the approval of minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so noted. Right, so all those, moved and seconded May 21, 2019. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And it passes unanimously. All right. Moving on to the next item on our agenda. This is general public comment. This is an opportunity for the community to come out and address the Planning Commission on topics that are not on the agenda for the evening. Looking around the room, we have no one joining us this evening. So we will move on from general comment to item E, which is the work study zoning use table update. We have Liz Williams here to walk us through this work study item. So I'll turn it over to Liz.
Sounds good. I guess I'll
I'll take this one. Start out by introducing, we've got a new face at the table. I'd like to introduce you all to Carmen Smith. She is our new limited term associate planner that has been assigned to support the use table project. So she'll be with us, believe until the end of the year, and until the funding that we have to support the position it terminates. So very excited to have her on board, and not to put you on the spot too much, but do you have anything you want to share with the commissioners about yourself and your background?
I just graduated from Western Washington University last month, got a bachelor's degree in environmental policy. And I was with the county, with the department for about a year working on the Manchester community outreach project. And I'm looking forward to being a part of this project now.
Well, welcome, Carmen.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we were here, it seems like a month ago or so, to give you an initial briefing on the use table project itself. And since that time, we have been really trying to ramp up and scope this project a little more in detail. And so a lot of our efforts have been around public outreach and engagement to bring awareness about the project to the community. We conducted two surveys. We'll focus on one tonight, the recent customer survey, and then we're finalizing the analysis and report writing of the community-wide survey that is much more geared towards this particular project. Tonight we're going to take the opportunity to kind of introduce you to some documents that we're going to be working with over the next month or so. And you'll see these documents grow and continue to build upon each other as we get into it a little more in detail. But we thought we'd just kind of ease into it tonight and let you know kind of where we're at in the process and just hoping to set the stage for later conversations, which will be much more robust and detailed. So with that, I think we'll start out by walking through the materials that were passed out around the room. And we'll start out with the document that has the summary of the recent customer survey. This was an addition to our initial outreach plan that we internally identified a need to conduct a second survey. And this was really geared towards understanding recent customer experiences with the department and kind of how they interact and navigate with our code to help inform the future framing of updates that we make through the use table. So I'm going to turn it over to Carmen because she did the bulk of the analysis on this to kind of hit the highlights, and then we can move on from there.
So like Liz mentioned, this survey went out to recent customers of the department, so anyone in the last 12 months who had contacted the department with a land use question or to obtain a permit. So it ended up being about 1,552 people that received the email for the survey. We got a total of 105 responses, and like Liz said, it's not necessarily a survey of overall county processes, but more the recent customers' experiences with the code. So some of the major themes, and it was up for about 2 weeks. So major themes that came out were most of the respondents had only interacted with the department once or twice. So that was about approximately 42% of respondents. Most respondents, about 50%, reported that this was, or they were contacting the department for a land use or project that they already knew was allowed. And some of the major themes from the more open-ended responses that came out were inconsistent or unclear information about requirements. Survey participants responded that they had difficulty navigating online, or they had ran into inconsistencies between information that they read themselves online and that they were told by staff in person. As well as the amount of reports and permits needed for projects and permits, they were surprised that they ran into health department review or geotechnical reports, or the multiple permits required for the same project. As well as cost and length of the process, of course. So moving into some of the more specific questions, we won't spend a ton of time on this, but as you can see, the first question just asked the participant to identify what type of customer they were, and the majority of the response was county residents. And on this question, participants were able to select more than one option, so some participants indicated multiple types of customers, so they might have been a builder and a county resident. Frequency, they were asked how often they'd worked with the department, and like I already mentioned, the majority were the first or second time that they had, or once or twice had worked with the department. Then they were asked at what point in the planning process did they contact the department, and that is the question three here. And so 52 participants, which is approximately 50% of the group, reported that they contacted the department for a project or land use that they knew was allowed. For participants that wanted to know if a project or land use was allowed, about 19% were inquiring about if it was allowed on their own property, and about 12 were inquiring if it was allowed on a property that they wanted to purchase. And those we had. Six participants wanting to know if where use was allowed in unincorporated Kitsap County, and then a handful that were looking out. They didn't have a project in mind, but they wanted to know where they were allowed, whether that was on their property or a property that they wanted to purchase. As far as the other category that was really specific responses, they worked with the department that as needed, you know, they were had clients and they performed feasibility studies. Participants were then asked if they encountered any surprises during the process, and as you can see, 56% said they did run into surprises throughout their process. And so that moves us into the fifth question here, which was an open-ended response. They were asked to enter their experience if they did run into a surprise. And multiple participants reported that they ran into multiple surprises throughout the process. And so the biggest category here was inconsistent or unclear information requirements, which I talked about briefly at the beginning. They had difficulty understanding the language, inconsistencies in what they heard from staff members. Again, the amount of reports and permits needed, and several participants expressed that they felt that there were unnecessary or rigid regulations in the county, such as requiring site development activity permits or critical area ordinance regulations or needing to meet density requirements. Again, on the bottom, two participants had said they ran into changes from a process that they had encountered previously, and a couple were surprised by unhelpful staff. And so the last question asked if participants had any suggestions to improve the permitting process in the future. And again, on this question, multiple participants indicated they had multiple suggestions moving forward. So the top category was less regulations, more flexibility, and permits required. This included if you could carry over a review from one permit to another permit if multiple were required on the same project, being more flexible in evaluating permits on a more project-by-project or site-by-site basis. And participants offered suggestions relating to better staff availability. They'd like to have staff have more time to spend with them, go out to project sites, and then also have the option of in-person permit submittal opposed to all online. Additionally, as faster processing time, lower costs. So the suggestions definitely correlate with what surprises that they ran into throughout the process. And five participants would like to see improved online process. So this was adding more information to the mapping portal on parcel search.
So I just want to caveat this particular survey by letting you know that the initial purpose that we were trying to get at with this was understanding kind of where our customers are when they start to dig into the code and permitting and what's allowed to be built on their property. And it really stemmed from an internal conversation about how we reframe the information that we have. And by that, I mean right now we have this use table that lays out all the zones. So someone could, if they, you know what use they want to do, they can look across the table and see what zones it's permitted in. Some other frameworks that we've encountered, communities, what they'll do is they'll actually take their use table and break it down by zone chapter. So, you know, if someone knows what their zoning is, then they just go to that zone chapter and they get all of the development regulations and uses that are allowed. And so that was kind of the purpose we were trying to get at with the survey. And I think the results are a lot more focused on the process. So I'm not certain that we necessarily fully answered our question, but I think our hypothesis was that we have customers that are going to be coming from both sides of the coin. They, you know, either have a land use that they're interested in and they want to know where it's permitted across the county, or they know what their zoning is, and so we need to be able to accommodate both users. And that's really our goal with looking forward and how we reformat our use table. You know, this is something we need to be cognizant of and aware of and provide guidance for both types of customers, essentially.
I guess I would add to that this is obviously a fairly simple survey, didn't dig into a lot of the detail and the nuance of this. So for example, when people said that they were applying for a permit and they knew that the use was allowed, we have no way of telling from this survey how they knew that. Mm-hmm. Did they look it up on Parcel Search and it just said residential and then they went, okay, I can build? Or did they actually look it up in code? We have no way of knowing that, mm-hmm. you know, at this kind of high level.
Mm-hmm. And then just as a kind of note about the broader community-wide survey, which I believe we shared a link with you recently so that you could participate with that and take the survey. We received 531 responses to that survey, so it was pretty good in terms of the number of participants. I'll caveat with saying that the demographic of participants was definitely in the category of 55 plus, so more of the retired perspective of the county. But
hey.
I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. I just wanted to point out that, you know, we had one person that was under the age of 21 respond to the survey. So it's not necessarily representative of our entire demographic makeup in the county. Maybe that's a more appropriate way of saying it.
55 plus does not imply retirees anymore.
No, you're right, yeah. Especially speaking for myself, I'm sure I'll be, like, never able to retire. But... So the results for that is very much more specific to this use table update and is one of the components that we're using to help guide recommendations and the initial draft proposal that we're working on together. And so our intention is to provide that. We're currently doing the narrative portion of it, but all the graphs and charting is done. So if we do have questions tonight that we want to take a look at the responses, we can pull that up on the screen. We just didn't want to provide you with a copy with it not being finalized at this point. So, moving on from survey, the next kind of piece that I think we want to talk about is this large document here with all the X's on it. So this is a comparison of land uses by jurisdiction. This is, I will admit, a consolidated version of the comparison of land uses by jurisdiction. Believe it or not, there's a longer version.
No.
And I think Carmen put it the best. It's amazing how many different ways you can say the same thing. And this is an example of that for sure. So what we did was we took a look at all the communities within Kitsap County, so all the city jurisdictions, in addition to the majority of the counties that surround the Puget Sound. We also talked to some of our current planning staff to, you know, ask, are there codes that you've encountered, you know, in your free time when you're not reviewing plans? And surprisingly, they had suggestions that they had encountered along the way. So we also looked at Eugene, Oregon as an example, and the city of Redmond, their code as well. So I guess I'll turn it over to Carmen again, because this is one that she definitely took a look at, and then we can let you know kind of how we've been utilizing this to eventually come up with essentially our new listing of categorical uses for Kitsap County. So we've got a little bit of methodology of how we're taking this list and consolidating, splitting, to arrive at a new list of categorical uses for our communities.
There are several uses that I don't know if they're going to show up in here, mm-hmm. but would seem to be under accessory dwelling units or temporary dwelling unit for a relative or special care units or something mm-hmm. like that. Kitsap County allows, I believe, for a mobile home or manufactured home, mm-hmm. and I don't know the definition of those two.
Yeah. we had conversation about that.
I've been confused by some of the definitions I've read.
Yeah.
Because they're not consistent.
Right.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's anybody's fault.
Yeah.
It's just the way they wrote it down. But I know Kitsap does that. I don't know if it falls any on a use table anywhere or if it's just something in a land use, what do we call them? Land use, not a code, but it's a land use.
The footnote? It's a footnote, I can tell you that.
No, maybe it's a footnote, but it's also in the LU8 or LU6 or whatever.
The policies.
The land use policy.
Yeah. We have all that stuff, mm-hmm. but we don't put it on the sheet, I suppose.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, that's a category where, to my observation, Kitsap County is a splitter rather than a lumper. And I learned just in our internal discussions that the definitions have changed over time. You know, we don't call them mobiles anymore because they don't have really functioning wheels after a while. But yeah, that's all covered on in the use table.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to recreational vehicle versus manufactured home. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yep.
So Liz, you said you looked at Eugene, Oregon, and was it Redmond, Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's got a few challenges there. They put too many words in their charts.
Sure.
Yeah, they chartify.
Yeah.
Right.
What should be text?
But you know that's a fair point though. We should put the state on both of those because there is a Redmond, Oregon as well.
Yeah.
Since we're including Eugene. The other thing that I, and I apologize, Carmen, if you were going to jump into this, but there is one that's somewhat an outlier, and that's Port Orchard, because Port Orchard just adopted a form-based code. So we found some interesting shifts because everything is bucketed differently mm-hmm. in that kind of a code than it is in the conventional codes.
Right.
And then did we get a soft copy of this as well?
Email copy.
Yeah.
We can distribute the electronic materials.
We haven't sent them out yet.
This is a very handy thing.
Yeah, we figured jurisdictions might want to take advantage of it, and we had a meeting with the cities, and they actually requested a copy of this.
All the planning directors said, please send us a
note. Yeah, yeah. In addition to the survey is the other thing that they've been very interested in. Yeah, I don't know if you want to kind of walk them through the process and kind of what this document all says.
So, as you can see on the top here, those are the jurisdictions. And I went through and pulled up their use tables and then added, first we started with Kitsap County and then went across from Bremerton on, looking at specifically their use table. So, like Liz mentioned, this is a working document. These were the uses that were specifically called out, not necessarily buried in other parts of their code. So there definitely could be other uses that are allowed in here. And I definitely took a splitting approach to go through and just not try and match anything up yet, just go through, list the uses. An X in the box means that it's allowed, not looking at specific zones where it's allowed or the level of permitting required for that use, just is it allowed in that jurisdiction? And then as a group internally, we have been going through this and doing a lumping and splitting exercise to try and consolidate, get to our new categorical uses. We've been looking at, are there certain uses that just already fall into another use that we've already had listed? So we've, a retail store, for example, can we put a into a general retail or banks, can those be general office to try and just consolidate and not be as split out like that? And then also uses like dwelling, duplex, can we just remove that from the table?
Or existing.
Existing, sorry. Yeah. Yes, not duplex.
Carmen, I've got a question. So you said that if the use was permitted in one of these codes, it got an X in the box.
Correct, yeah.
So if a use is identified as not permitted, but it is identified in someone's code, are they in here or they didn't make the cut?
No, these are just permitted uses.
Okay.
And then also trying to see if we can split things out by indoor versus outdoor uses. So equipment rental, can we have an indoor and then an outdoor? Breaking things out by size, whether that's square footage or number of rooms or number of residents in things like B&Bs and adult family homes.
Carmen, in a couple of these, like line 246 and 252 of the office and management on the commercial side and the general retail, across the board, you, for the most part, show all those permitted across, but they're only in the lower category.
Oh, so those were when, as part of my own consolidating process, when jurisdictions had listed specific types of retail out, I put them in instead of listing every single kind in the new page, I just put them in the smallest size. Those were ones that were not necessarily, that jurisdiction didn't break it out by size, but they had office.
Okay, so if, say, Snohomish County... So if Snohomish County, for example, has a Costco, so it's not limited to 4,000 square feet, but but it just implies that
they just didn't break it out by square footage.
Okay. Thank you.
Good point, And then also the possibility of adding an accessory use as a, its own category, like you have residential or commercial businesses. We saw other jurisdictions doing that as well as having temporary. So those would be possible changes as well.
I think the only other category that, and I think you touched on it slightly, was when we were looking at lumping versus splitting uses, also looking at the intensity of that use. And so, you know, a number of customers that might really focusing in on compatibility as, you know, scaling the types of uses in that regard. So it's another type of
And also breakdown. Looking to make sure that are the uses in the right category that we want them in. So motel or hotel, it's in residential currently, but does it make more sense to be in the commercial section? So clean up things like that as well.
So this is, as Carmen said, a work in progress, but you can see, you know, how many additional options there may be for the county to look at and or potentially removing some of our categorical uses now and converting them to something a little more modern or different.
Can someone give us just a quick thumbnail what the form-based code difference is? Is it I'm looking for, is it more customer friendly? What's the distinction between what we have in form-based
code? I would say, Port Orchards is unique in the sense that they have what they define as building types, and that's really focused on the scale of the structure that's being built. So as you go through this, you'll see things like office, you know, is a building type.
General building.
Yeah, or general building is a type. But then they also do have an allowed use table by zones. So they do focus on use. Traditionally, form-based codes don't focus on what's contained inside of the structure. They're really focused on the built form and how that integrates into the built environment.
So the form we're talking about is the form of the building, not the
exactly.
set of forms.
Not what's going to
exactly.
be inside.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But from a practical standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want, you know, in a building in a residential area, you don't want to have some sort of, you know, fracking operation or something, you know, that they put it in a really nice house, you know.
Right.
So yeah. So you do still have a need for to address the allowed uses, mm-hmm. but that's not the focus. The
right.
primary focus of the form.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is a growing form in urban areas yeah. across the country that's starting to pop up all over. In some areas, Tacoma adopted one. What was it? You recall it was like 2 years ago or
yeah.
3 years ago.
I know Redmond.
For some of their
looked
areas.
At it. We looked at it extensively, you know, during the time that I was on the council and the planning commission there.
Right.
You know, it has its advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah.
And so overall, again, if our focus is to improve customer service and improve customer satisfaction, your perception and experience has been, it's kind of a wash. It really doesn't.
Well, because you also have not just the customer satisfaction, but also the neighbor satisfaction and the community satisfaction.
Yeah.
So when you start saying, here's the envelope, in this area of Kitsap County, we're going to have required, you can have build these envelopes. And what you put in them is not our business. We mm-hmm. don't care. We're not going to regulate you for that. We're just going to regulate the envelope of the building, what it's going to look like. And so, yeah, it's hard to sell to a community sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the local examples of it that we've seen, I think the jury is still out.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, for Port Orchard especially, which just adopted it, and actually is adopting in phases. It's the everybody from the city has said, from the council to the planning staff has said, no, it's just way too early to tell at this point. But it does bring up some interesting questions, you know, as you pointed out, Commissioner, what goes on inside a facility, how much do you really need to get into that? You know, for example, there are a couple of jurisdictions. If you flip to page 3 on here and go towards the bottom, you look at the recreational cultural uses. You see kind of the ultimate splitting going on amusement centers, where it's making distinguishes between basketball courts and tennis courts. You know, do we really need to get to that degree of resolution?
Paintball indoor, paintball outdoor.
You know, maybe some people just have a reaction to the sound of volleyballs. I don't know, but and some of them are clearly splitting to much much greater degrees than others are. You know, I think kind of our initial thinking in the department is we really don't need to get to that fine line unless there is some external manifestation of the use that is impacting the community.
Yeah, typically I would think that when you have commercial or industrial uses in areas that are proximate to residential or residential rural, mm-hmm. I mean, as a hearing examiner, those were the big things. You know, the outdoor storage
right.
yards or
mm-hmm.
or you know those types of commercial uses that are embedded in where people live.
Right.
So I think that more splitting on that might be a helpful exercise. But yeah, I think typically in, you know, areas where, you know, commercial, industrial, you know, office, business park, I think it's less important what's inside the buildings.
Mm-hmm. Or would it be easier to say, here's your, you know, the use or the envelope, and to say whatever, you know, what would be restrictive to that use to limit the effect to the neighborhood? Or in other words, you know, we're not going to allow,
Right.
The biggest complaint for rock crushing is noise and dust. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying rock crushing, well, you can't go create dust. You can't make noise, you know, to a certain extent, certain uses, instead of trying to define each use. Mm-hmm. Just say what is permitted in that area. Now, residential, yeah, you're going to be quiet at 10 o'clock and you're not going to make noise. You're, you know, whatever else restrictions go there, but you're not having to define it 100 times for
right.
each little use. You look at it and say, okay, roosters. You know, the biggest complaint there is noise. So we're not talking about what's creating the noise. We're talking about, hey, you're violating the rule there that says the noise should not be being generated.
Well,
because it's just on two boards then, because you're also going to interject the level of process that's going to be required to have that use in a particular zone. You know, will it be a conditional use, full conditional use permit that's required that would address those types of issues? Thinking of some of the mining operations that were approved in Kitsap County, you know, with 100 conditions of approval, that sort of thing. You know, so I think that it'll intersect that way. And so that's what makes this so devilishly complicated, I think.
Mm-hmm. It is.
They grow. Mm-hmm.
And I take your point. You know, when I think about how to administer that, you know, if we just say, we really don't care what's making the noise, just don't make the noise, then the potential for that is that dramatically expands the need for our enforcement capacity. Because then when somebody's got their rooster and they're saying, well, my rooster's quiet, and then the next neighbor says, well, my rooster is making noise, but it stops at 10 o'clock at night. And then all of a sudden there's crowing at midnight. Then, you know, there's always the risk that we're just going to be constantly in enforcement mode and having to you know, deal with noise ordinances and other things other than land use. So the question is, how do you best regulate that? Do you regulate the thing that is making the noise, or do you regulate the noise itself? You know, that's kind of some of the bigger picture questions. Mm-hmm. One thing that we have been really looking at in this are things like traffic impacts, which is something that is often predictable for certain uses. You know, wedding venues is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have the farm down the easement road that suddenly is doing weddings, and all of a sudden you have 150 or 200 cars going down somebody's easement road in front of their house, and they didn't sign up for that. Mm-hmm. Or We have parking is an excellent example. Or we have the stratification on the office uses and the retail uses. There's a big difference between a Costco and a 5,000 square foot arts and craft shop. Mm-hmm. You know, and they have different demands, they have different neighborhood impacts and all those sorts of things. So, you know, how we balance all this is the deeper you dive into it, as most of you know, the deeper you dive, the more complicated it can get. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions on this at this point? You know, welcome your review on it. If there's particular ones that strike your fancy and you want us to explore further or feel passionate about, we can definitely continue that conversation as we move into future workshops. So,
yeah. And if you could send that out electronically, that would be very helpful.
Sounds good.
Wonderful piece of work.
And if you all have, you know, I mean, I know we had some questions about how to interpret this, and I guess what my ask of you, Carmen, is to start to make notes of that, so that way as we hand this around to broader audiences, like all the planning directors at the other cities, they're going to want to understand, they're going to have those same questions, so we should, you know, have some interpretation notes. But frankly, I want to commend you for this work. This is incredibly tedious and difficult work, and thank you for digesting all this for us.
But in the end, these are categories of use that are present in these jurisdictions, that's all. We don't know
Correct.
What zone they're in.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It gets, it gets interesting at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start to think about all these strange uses, you wonder why surface parking is a specified use. I mean, mm-hmm. where else should you park?
Well,
parking lots.
Excuse me. Well, this started out as an inquiry into how different jurisdictions are carving up the uses.
Yeah.
To what degree are they lumping and splitting?
Yeah.
And you know, how did they all carve it up? You know, there's a lot of detail behind it that we didn't even touch. You know, like which uses are outright permitted versus conditional, right. Et cetera, et cetera. But
that's going to be the next kind of iteration as we land on more of a solid framework of which uses, you know, moving forward, then we can go back and take a look at zones, permissibility. But again, comparing the purpose of a zone across communities is going to be somewhat difficult because different communities define their zones different ways. So we'll have to, you know, that it's a perfect segue into the next documents that we've prepared, you know, trying to keep true to the intent and purpose of the zones that we have here in Kitsap as we identify uses that are appropriate within them.
Okay, but before we move to the next document, my earlier question to Carmen about the uses that are here have to have been identified as an allowed use somewhere.
Correct.
I mean, there are a number of prohibited uses that communities have,
mm-hmm.
very noxious, you know, operations or, you know, that are just prohibited outright, you know, right. Throughout the community. And
offices.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. and I guess I'm a little concerned that we're not capturing those somehow and that, you know, that we would not be addressing those. And that, you know, I haven't had a chance to review the table. I have any spring to mind, but to the extent that a use was prohibited outright throughout the community, we might want to think about mm-hmm. those as well and how we in Kitsap County will treat that type of a use.
Sure, yeah. Say just based on our current code structure, if it's not listed, it's prohibited.
Right.
You know, so that is a way of, you know, essentially getting at that end. But to your point, you know, it's definitely something we should be aware of.
Prohibition by omission.
Yeah. all right. Any other questions on that document? Otherwise, we can move on. So the next one is the zone purpose statements. So we found as we were starting to look at recommending some changes to our current level of permit review that we have identified in our table currently, it was really helpful to reflect and look at the purpose of the zone as we were going through the table and ensure that the uses are appropriate and compatible with that intended stated purpose. So, you know, definitely familiarize yourself with these if you haven't already. And as we walk through, it's just a good kind of check and balance for future review as we go on. So, yeah?
Where do we have UCR zone?
I
don't know of any place in the county that the UCR zone.
That is, there are two locations. One is in the Kingston Urban Growth Area up by the golf course and Light Horse.
Okay, that's a large. Is, again, that the tribe owns a great deal of land there, and so they're a natural entity to try to develop.
It's not necessarily tied to a property owner. Okay. It's the land itself. The zone is intended to cluster development at an urban low density,
okay.
But with clusters of development, it's a development style.
Okay. And the other place?
The other place is Northern Silverdale, the old, it used to be Senior Living Homestead. Mm-hmm. It transitioned to urban cluster residential in 2016,
okay.
And that is north of 303,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just next to Barker Creek Corridor, but on the central Kitsap UGA.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Now on the MROs, I recall on one of the private comp plan amendments, mm-hmm. that there was some discussion. I think it was the commission's desire to have some data on the need, the continuing need for mineral extraction in the county. Mm-hmm. You know, how are we doing
the inventory?
Do we have are we low? Are we high? Are we got way too much gravel? You know, where are we at with that? I think.
We definitely need to do an update to our inventory. The last time it was done and designations were applied across the county was 1996, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I think our plan, you know, it hasn't been budgeted for in terms of being able to do a process like that, an inventory process, but it is definitely on our radar and will need to be addressed in the short term, probably in the next few years. So,
well, I'd like to capture that for the Planning Commission report as an area of interest from the Planning Commission.
Okay.
On our annual report.
Okay.
Amanda, did you catch that? Thank you.
Okay. There's a difficulty involved with doing.
I beg your pardon?
Inventory for mineral extraction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
A difficulty that for making an inventory, mm-hmm. a lot of properties have a mineral rights retained by somebody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're, and not where you would expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to inventory that? I
mean, anything that was previously owned by a warehouser has split mineral rights.
And I think
there's a whole story behind that too.
I think some individuals also just decided that they why give it up, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been, in my experience, I mean, going all the way back to the early 90s, the mineral inventory process and how you approach it has been one of the more, I don't want to say complex, but tricky or difficult aspects of the Growth Management Act. Because you're having to forecast volumes and figure out where are you going to get that, and you're looking at private property and looking at how are you going to do this, and you have a limited number of existing quarries, and you're forecasting will they be able to expand to meet the forecasted demand or not, and it's a requirement of the Growth Management Act, but there are also some pretty serious cost implications too. To say we don't need to produce any more gravel anywhere else to supply Kitsap County's needs, we can just buy it from King County, that doesn't fly. And not only that, but it has a lot of impact on things like affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Because as we learned from the work that Liz did on the MRO last year, trucking gravel 25 miles doubles the cost of the aggregate. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest costs that you have going into a house is the foundation and the paving and everything else. So, you know, it's a really interesting question because nobody wants these things next to them, but we all need it and we all rely on it.
Yeah, and I guess that's my point, to the extent that these are prioritized by the county, mm-hmm. and by the state, quite frankly.
Yes.
You know, the use is so intrusive in folks' living situations that kind of like to at least be able to tell them that the reasons why why this exists and why this has priority.
Right. And unlike some of the Cascade counties, you know, King, Pierce, Snohomish, we don't have the luxury in this county of shoving them into the foothills, you know, and having good sound buffers and things like that. We're very limited in our supply. But I do want to thank you, though, for bringing that up. I think that's a good suggestion to add that to the report.
Yeah. Okay. Darren, do you want to walk them through the footnote analysis quickly?
Sure. before we're doing the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just to introduce it.
I can. So for the record, Darren Gurney. The footnote analysis that you have before you, simply put, it's a list of all the footnotes with the relative number. And then off to the right, you'll see three different columns. One is when it's applied to a categorical use. So that far left column in our use table, if it's applying across the entire row. it's identified there. The second one is the inverse of that. So if it's at the top of the row under urban restricted zone, the whole zone is applied to, then it's identified in that column. The one on the far right is basically going through the combo of the two. So this use in these zones, this footnote's applying to that. What we found this to be is a useful exercise in identifying that early on in our code development efforts, we had a lot of across the board applications and zone applications. And then when you get to the later footnotes, you get into very specific to each zone.
The carve outs.
Yes. But as you're going through the table exercises that we have in the future, this is just meant to be a reference document for you. We do plan on analyzing this further into what Liz was talking about in formatting the tables, reducing the number of footnotes by formatting in ways that make it easier to use these.
Yes. Darren, the other thing I've always thought this exercise as being is kind of a zero-based budget review. And I'll give you an example. I think footnote number 8 talks about veterinary hospitals in the rural residential and rural protection zone. So we've got a horse doctor, and she wants to set up a vet place. The lot she's on is a non-conforming lot. We don't have a full 5 acres. All the neighbors love it. We got a horse doctor right next door. We go down to the county and said, no, 50-foot setback. Sorry, that's the way it's just got to be in our code. Why 50? Why not 35? Why not 25? We have in the footnote additional provisions for mitigating noise, odor, and all of that stuff. Why, who came up with 50 feet? Why is that the right number? And so as I'm looking at, in particular, we see the survey that says, geez, we got regulations, is there, why do we have that regulation? And so as we're going through this, that would be the one of the things I'm hoping we're looking at is somebody came up with a number 30 years ago of 50 feet. Nobody really knows why, I expect. Maybe you do. But why is that the right number? Why shouldn't it be something else? So that would be my hope in terms of getting this, not just let's do allowed, not allowed, a little bit of different process. It's a CUP rather than an ACUP, but also getting down to this should be looked at from bones.
I think your zero-based budget analog is a good one.
Yeah.
The question that I have when I see this is why doesn't this show up in the dimensity table as opposed to as a footnote on the use table?
Yeah. Yeah. But the same thing should apply. That's kind of actually what I'm worried about. Is now, it shouldn't be on the footnote. Let's move it up to, well, wait a minute. It's 50 feet. Why do we need 50 feet?
Yeah. Of course. Now, just to dissect what you're talking about, it sounds like the vet wants to put it in on her 5 acres. Everybody around her has horses. Mm-hmm. So 50 feet is not even required, if you think about it. Because everybody's doing the same thing.
No, I think the code requires her to set back her facility 50 feet off all of her line. And so it was a nice horse facility.
I'm just pointing out that
it
sounds like there's common use horses in the area, so they don't care. So it's really 50 feet from a residential area?
No, it's 50 feet
as opposed to
property line.
Next to a residential area, next to another farm, next to
another zone.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen that addressed typically two ways. One is I think that the variance provisions in our code are archaic.
They're impossible.
They just are. I mean, the criteria can be much more meaningful. And then I've also seen it addressed with. Getting relief from things like setbacks and that sort of thing with neighbor's consent. You know, if the adjacent property owners are fine with it, you know, as opposed to going through the variance process, which, you know, any person who operates in a land use sphere, you know, it's like, don't take me into the variance process, you know. But I think that we could make it more user-friendly and still protect the code and the uses as well. So just throwing that out there.
If you have suggestions of less archaic variance processes, I would be interested in, in seeing those if you have some suggestions. You know, and I think, you know, I think your point is well taken. You know, I think it could be that, you know, maybe it's not a horse doctor that's next door. Maybe it's dogs that are barking all night long in the veterinary kennel and are stressing out all the neighbors' horses. You never know how this got here. Right.
But again, so I would advocate, again, it's already in the code about noise mitigation requirements and that sort of thing. It was one of the noise mitigation requirements would be a bigger setback.
Right.
But we don't need to put a hard and fast setback requirement that nobody has a real basis on how do we get it, why is it there?
Mm-hmm. It seems like most veterinary clinics are located within 50-foot of the property line, mm-hmm. not their line. It's all residential since Kitsap County decided to make everything residential once upon a time.
So, Darren, I have a question here. So, the reserved lines, I think that's fairly clear. Those are ones that are not in use anymore, right?
That's correct.
But you have some rows here where all three are blank, like item number two.
Yes.
Is that one that is just flat out not referenced?
That is correct. There is one in the table in Excel. There's another column off to the right that has notes of things like this, where it's like, this is not referenced, we need to research. Those kind of comments are in that table. For your table today, we didn't include those notes because those are still in progress, actually, trying to make sure we're capturing all the relative comments from our internal discussions. I do want to speak to Richard's point, though, for the setback piece. Not committing us to a future update, but we're trying to stick with the use table elements without the setbacks and the design-based items. As we're going through this process, we're trying to be very aware of scope creep and not expanding this too much, but we do to definitely understand and want to capture those kind of comments as we're moving forward.
Mm-hmm. It'd be great to maybe identify a parking lot document that comes out of this exercise, that where we've identified other places that are pain points.
Daycare centers, again, and we had to go through and try to get something changed, and because it was in a footnote through the comp plan process, and that didn't work, so we had to sneak in a change. And again, it was requiring a parking place for every student. which is goofy. It's a bad idea. It's a bad concept, and you can't change it until you get to some process like this.
Right.
And so that's why I'm saying, boy, I've got an opportunity to go through and look at some of the stuff that just is goofy. You know, again, parking numbers. You do that. We should to be consolidating parking to, you know, preserve land. Anyway, enough lecture. So if we get a chance, boy, I'm going to be looking at saying, look, there's some elements here. I know you want to do this on a grand scale, but this one particular doesn't make any sense. We're here. Let's make a change.
So I should point out also, and I agree that the parking lot is probably going to be a big one by the time we're done. As a logical follow-on activity, what we are currently planning towards right now, and we're discussing this with the board and internally with the department, is moving on to the dimensity table next year after we finish this. So the reason we're not unfolding it all together is just because this is almost like Pandora's box. If we don't do it sequentially and kind of thoughtfully, it can mushroom on us, and then we've got a big headache.
May I make a pitch for single subject footnotes? I'm looking at this footnote two that requires a minimum setback from any abutting property line, provided, however, advertising for products shall be limited to two signs of 6 feet square. Mm-hmm. Neither has anything to do with the other, but both are in the footnote.
On the positive side, it's not referenced anywhere.
The footnotes, you know, single subject. You know, if we need more footnotes, that's fine, but trying to satisfy multiple requirements in a footnote.
Structurally in the code, what we are hoping to do is is have it, any footnotes, if there are any remaining at the end of this process, that they are strictly clarifying footnotes and are not actually requiring things.
Not regulating within the footnotes.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. If they are regulating within the footnotes, then we need to get them in the appropriate sections.
Right.
Okay. And so how would you handle something like the famous footnote 48, which is urban-esque development requires urban-esque sewers and water.
Yeah. So that would go into whatever appropriate section of the code. Yeah.
So that would probably fall under each one of those zone chapters. There's a provision right now for special provisions applying to this zone. Mm-hmm. Our thought is that that's where a footnote like that would fall and end up.
And one other thing I thought of as we went taking a look at this. Was a lot of the footnotes are probably a result of something that we have done in the way we've done our zoning, that if we don't put it in, we're afoul of either the Growth Management Act or the countywide planning policies or the reasonable measures, and so all of that has to be folded in and coordinated somehow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I also think we'll need at the end of the day, to the extent that these footnotes are going away or migrating somewhere else, a crosswalk as to where they end up.
Yeah.
Or the current users of the code.
Yeah, that's going to drive a lot of the users crazy if we can't do that.
Just imagine.
Very much so. Yeah.
It's going to be, as it unrolls, it's going to be confusing enough for people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So unless you have anything else that you.
Questions.
Okay.
Yeah. I found it to be a useful document. As you start to dive into the allowed uses in the table, it's a good reference guide to just quickly check what does number 102 mean, and how does that apply to this use. So, all right, that leads us to the last document. Which is the colorful one here of the initial kind of very, very draft, preliminary draft, of the first few zones that we are going to be looking at changes to the level of permit review. So this isn't all of the zones that would be impacted by this project. We're just trying to softly introduce this document to you. It'll grow and become much larger as time goes on. But essentially what we did internally is we took a look at, we independently as staff reviewed the land use table and recommended whether the level of permit review should be reduced, increased, or if the use should be allowed that's currently prohibited, or if it should be prohibited if it's currently allowed. And so there were some certain land uses that need more discussion because there was differing perspectives by internal staff. So this is going to, again, iteratively change over time through discussions with the Planning Commission and then also internal discussions as we move forward. But we felt like it was a good kind of starting point to start introducing and having a dialogue about potential changes per each zone. And the suggestion is to eventually have all of the different zones that will be updated through this project on one document, so you can actually look at them across the board and then also from a down the zone itself in terms of what's allowed.
Well, I look forward to staff's thinking that. I'm looking at places of worship in schools with the staff recommendation being to reduce permitting in all zones. And those are two of the most impactful uses.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember heard a number of conditional use permits, but they attract a lot of interest because of the level of traffic that they bring into more of the residential and rural areas.
Right.
And even hours of operation. Too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So those just jump right out.
Yeah, that's fine. So I don't know if you want to start walking through this document, we could. We're at about 6:46 right now, or if you want to just take the time and digest this.
I think the feedback might be more meaningful if we have a chance to look at it.
Okay.
I did want to go through a couple of kind of logistical pieces when you're looking at the document, if that's okay. So what we found in our internal audit of this is the most helpful way for us was we looked at our zone intent, so that purpose statement piece, and then we took our categorical uses and definitions for those uses, and some of us did it vertically, so we went through the whole zone. Some did it just by the row for the use. It's helpful to, it sounds bad, but it's helpful to do both. When you're going with the use across, you're seeing that use relative to all the other zones, and it gives you kind of a context for that use across all the way. Going down the zone, it's fairly, I wouldn't say straightforward, but you have that purpose statement in your mind, so you're going through those uses and you're like, this is appropriate, this isn't. So we've done that in both ways, and this document is reflecting that. So as you're looking at this document for this one in the future, those are some good things to keep in mind. And we do have a consolidated document that has the definitions listed with links to them to help with that process as we move forward.
Just real quick, so I understand, the document here in terms of the recommendations, that's not based on a impacted group, it's based on internal staff's thought as opposed to people who have real interest in, say, daycares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is intended just as a starting point for discussion with this with the Planning Commission. To call it a staff recommendation, I think, would be
too premature.
This was a handful of staff going through, and you know, and everybody kind of took their own approach to it. But you know, like Darren pointed out, one of the more productive ways of looking at it was to go through, look at the intent of the zone, and then look at the uses that were allowed in that zone. For example, what I found personally in doing it was that in some cases we were allowing uses in some zones where the intent of the zone was actually precluded by allowing certain uses within it. So for example, if we have a high density residential area, and this is an area that we are relying on from a growth planning perspective to have high density residential, but then at the same time we're allowing guest houses and caretaker dwellings and other lower intensity uses, then it's precluding that higher density use. You know, and there are other examples of that too, where you may have one particular, you know, commercial intent, but by allowing all residential uses in it, we may be precluding the use of that as a commercial property. You know, so there are things like that. But then, as Darren pointed out, looking at it crosswise then, and saying, okay, across the county, across all the zones, are we consistent in our thinking and our application? I found that to be productive exercise as well.
Is there a place for everything? I mean, are we allowing it somewhere?
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, you end up with some constitutional questions and challenges about, you know, completely precluding a use from
exactly.
a community.
Right.
And so I think that's a helpful exercise too, to see,
yep.
you know.
Yeah, and there were places where in my own review of it, I found that there were some uses that we just, by default, allowed them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it really fits the intent of the zone or not, and there were others that we were extremely restrictive on, that you know that lead to other potential issues. Yeah. For example, we have in Keyport and Manchester, we have commercial zones where not a single commercial use is outright permitted. You know, that kind of goes against the point of the commercial zoning. Zone. Why would you have a commercial zone and then not permit commercial uses in it?
I think that might have something to do with the nature of those two communities, mm-hmm. where they want direct oversight and maybe a conditional use for a specific commercial activity might draw some attention. I mean, Keyport has 1,000 people, maybe. Mm-hmm. And Manchester, don't block my view.
Right.
The question I have, I understand a lot of this more discussion needed and all that sort, but what does reduced permitting mean?
That would mean going from conditional use to perhaps administrative conditional use or ACP to permitted.
Kind of what I thought.
Yep.
Sure. Okay.
What kind of time frame are you anticipating for this little project?
This little project. So we're scheduled, we have 3 workshops with the Planning Commission. So this is number one. We'll be back on August 20th for the second, and then your first meeting in September. I don't know the specific date off the top of my head, but that would be getting us to, a new level of permit review or proposal that then could be shared throughout the community with various stakeholder groups. So, and then from there, the process, September and October is pretty much gonna be, external outreach and engagement, and then internal analysis. And then going into the end of 2019 is when we were anticipating the public process would start with public hearings before the Planning Commission, with your recommendation coming towards the end of this year, and then moving to the board in the first quarter of 2020. And all of this is pending, subject to change. But, I think the board and the department really wants to make progress on this, so that's why we've set out an ambitious timeline so that we can show some real changes and relief to those that have expressed the desire to see this project move forward.
Anticipating a little bit of schedule creep, which we just need to acknowledge it.
Yep.
Ideally we would like to have this done in the second quarter of next year. And then start marching straight into the dimensity table immediately following that.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Did you get what you needed from us tonight?
Well, I guess, do you feel these materials are helpful to inform our discussions moving
Very.
Forward?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Excellent. And thank you for the large format.
Yeah.
For someone who needs to read something in a font that can be seen from space.
I'm glad we switched to 11x17 then.
Liz, it's the over 55
eyes. The retirees really say thanks.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I just want to be crystal clear here. We're not trying to segment the way you're seeing this. We're still processing the other side of this chart here.
Yeah.
That's why that we walk this in instead of emailing it out earlier, because you're getting this is hot off the presses.
It's enough.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Darren, where did this get printed?
Upstairs. And I think everyone in the department.
Both of
is
our
printer,
our color printers in the department that would print 11x17 in color, they both went kaput on us.
Yeah. Of course.
Well, thank you. This is the color coding is helpful too.
Good.
But we soft copy as well would be great.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we get all of these materials emailed to you and the rest of the commissioners.
And as you're sinking your brains into this, if you have other jurisdictions that you feel have really good models that we should be thinking about, or that have different clustering of uses or better descriptions of uses, let Liz know and let Carmen know. There was one other question. Just slipped my mind. I'm having a senior moment. speaking of eyeglasses.
Yeah. Or parking lot? Are you thinking?
No.
Process based?
It'll come to me.
Okay.
Tonight.
I got it. So our intent also is one thing that we realized in going through this is that not all of the uses have definitions either.
Oh, yes.
So perhaps as you're going through these, you know, put a little bit of thinking into the definitions, because what we would like to do is kind of freshen that up a bit and make sure that we have, that we actually have a definition in the definition section of the title that that covers every use that we have.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Because there are a few things that are left to the imagination right now.
So that's the next document that Carmen's working on right now.
Can we get a big chart on that too?
Yeah, yeah. No, there's definitely that.
I would say it was, what, about 20% of them don't have
definitions? It's about right, like, yeah. I think, if I remember correctly, it's quite a few. Yeah, and so we're taking a look at, you know, filling those gaps in, and as we identify potential new uses, also looking at how communities are defining those, and then also doing the crosswalk, like you mentioned. So if a use is going to be lumped with something else, we want to make sure that folks know where it ends up at the end of the day. So there's a lot of organization, a lot of detail that goes into this, so kudos to Carmen and the rest of the staff, because it's really been a lot of screen time recently.
Well, and I have to say, Redmond undertook this exercise after having a development guide that was drafted by committee in 1973. Uh-huh. So in the 90s, or the early 2000s, they appointed a citizen commission, to a code update commission, mainly planning commissioners and folks like that. They met every week for a year, mm-hmm. working through how to streamline and freshen and do the things that you're doing here, you know, 10 of them. So kudos to you. This is an incredibly complicated project, and I like what I see so far.
That's good to hear. At least the direction
going,
is good.
I think is good.
Okay. You're off to a good start.
Awesome. Yeah.
And the survey is...
Good. All right. Okay. Well, I think with that, I'm good. If you guys want to.
Well, with that, we'll close up item E and move on to item F. Administrative update?
Sure. Yeah. The only thing I have for the department administrative update is, I addressed this, I believe, at our last time we met. We have two assistant director vacancies right now. One for the building safety and the intake side of the house, and the other for development services and engineering and planning and environmental programs. The latter, replacing Jim Bolger's position, is being advertised right now, and it's a narrow window. It's a short time frame because the board's intent is to fill the position in September, if possible. So it's a short time frame, but broadly distributed. My understanding is that we have gotten quite a few applications in so far. And opening closes, the advertisement closes on the 5th. And then after that, the intent is to go into preliminary telephone interviews, and then from there into personal interviews. And then once that position is done, the department's intent is to move forward with filling the second assistant director position.
I think we have one site-specific comp plan amendment for this year. Do we have any schedule when we're going to be reviewing the 2019 site-specific?
Excuse me. I think that's correct. Do you remember if it's more than one?
There's one site-specific amendment this year, the Dickey Road, which was a carryover from last year. And then I believe there's 8 or 9 additional county sponsored amendments.
And yes. So we'll be looking at those mid-fall time.
I believe our current timeline is to bring those forward for workshop at the next meeting. That's dependent on, you know, being able to produce the documents that need to be there for your review.
I've been forewarned that the next two meetings will be very long.
Yes.
And very, very busy agendas. So if anyone has scheduling issues, please let me know and let Amanda know as soon as possible.
It should be noted that the meeting in September is the Tuesday after Labor Day.
Oh, okay.
So
Because the one that we had the day before the 4th of July was so productive.
Yeah.
just along that line, it might be helpful for some of us to, if we were queried, you know, email-wise, of are you attending or not? It serves as a reminder, and it can give a feedback of, you know, letting us know if we've got a quorum or not.
Well, I do, every email I send out with materials does have the questions. Usually they go out a week in advance, but I can do it earlier than that. Is that like 2 weeks or the month, or I mean?
Well, I know I set my reminders a week, 2 days, and then a day, and then an hour. Just follow through. But no, I'm saying as far as, you know, we came tonight and we didn't know who was going to be here or not, it might have been nice to have a heads up on that.
Amanda, are those sent out as calendar invites?
No. I mean, I send out an email with that has the agenda and it's got materials, and then I usually say, you know, this is materials for the upcoming meeting on, you know, blah, 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 and then I always include in there to let you know if you will be able to make it. So I don't ask for a confirm or decline, but I assume if you don't tell me you're not coming, you have to be here.
Yeah, I think maybe a separate email, just a quorum check email, you know, please confirm whether you will attend or not. Would be helpful, because you know, in the materials are one thing, and but you maybe just in advance of even sending the materials to just do a quick quorum check.
Okay, you think 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, just to kind of get a sense of how we're doing on that, and then the one that's the day after Labor Day. Is there any way to? Is there a reason why that meeting couldn't move by a week? That's a tough for a big. A big agenda meeting.
What else do we have on the agenda for that day? Do you know yet?
That's when the timber code is coming.
We've got all. Yeah, it's all of it. It's the timber harvest.
Okay.
So
the next meeting
on the 20th,
yeah.
We have work studies for the comp plan amendment and then timber harvest code, and that's also the public hearing for timber harvest code, as well as another work study for the zoning table. So on the 3rd, it's two work studies, if needed, it says, for the Kingston UBC and the comp plan amendment, and then the public hearings for both of those also. So if you need work study before, have questions that you want to have answered before that, but that's the bulk of meeting on the 3rd.
So before we commit to that in this discussion here, let us go back, see what the schedule impact will be of moving some of those, because I know some of those are very time sensitive.
Yeah,
right.
Right now the major driver that we have on things like the comprehensive plan amendments are just getting all the meetings scheduled. It's not actually doing the work, it's getting the meetings scheduled sometimes. Yeah. It stretches the schedule, so let's take a look at that, and then I agree, it would be logical.
A lot of people take vacation at that time of year, and you know, before kids go back to school and things like that. And I'd like to have the benefit of, you know, everybody at the table with, you know, adequate time to prepare.
Yeah, and it's always a challenge having some commissioners coming in on one day and then not being there the next, and then, you know, that rotation is kind of hard for people to manage the information. So,
if it's at all possible,
Great. We just want to understand the schedule impacts before we commit to it.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for the administrative update. The next item on our agenda is anything for the good of the order. I think, Tom, you had something.
Well,
you
wanted? Yes, I had a concern just listening to the tape, not being present for the meeting on May 21st. I think. Where it was talking about the potentially getting rid of a conditional use permit for accessory dwelling units in the rural area. And the mention, I think it was your voice that said, it's on the radar. And if I were here, I'd say, well, what's that mean?
That's been on the radar for a long time, actually, and so that's something that the department has been interested in investigating a little bit further. What I would suggest is that we do that at a day when Scott Diener can be here, because he's been kind of in the center of that discussion. It's a question that the tribes have been interested in as well, and so I would suggest let's get that on the calendar at some point when Scott can be here, and then we can discuss the implications of that.
That'd be great, because that has a big impact on affordable housing.
Affordable housing, population allocations or population targets. There are ripple effects on that.
Yeah, I know that there are things that are in tension.
Yeah.
It also has an impact on the urban-rural split.
Right.
Yes.
And there's significant reason to be cautionary about opening up permissibility to building more homes on substandard properties that are out in the rural area. They're less than 5 acres, and there's lots of them. I mean, there's 50,000 to 70,000 properties out there that could be opened up for this sort of thing if we just said, go for it.
Yes, and I know Scott has run the numbers on that to look at just how many of these we've been getting over the past several years, and the numbers are actually quite low. So that kind of implies that there might not be a big issue there. On the other hand, if you outright permit it, that might mean that we're going to just open the door to it, and then it's going to increase. So,
well, and the full conditional use permit process is very expensive and very time consuming. There is an ACUP process that maybe might split the baby on this.
So I
wouldn't necessarily draw the implication that there's not a lot of interest. It could be that it's so cost prohibitive that nobody's doing it as
exactly.
well.
And in some cases, there was one just recently that I listened to, a strange hobby I have, listening to these sort of things on BCAT.
You listen to the hearing examiner?
Hey, it's okay.
I had a vast viewing audience when I was here.
Wow.
Well, you have an audience at least one.
You were her audience, so okay.
Yeah. But in any case, this particular property was out on Bond Road someplace, and it's right next to Gamblewood, which is urbanesque, and what that property had was three entrances to Bond Road presently. Well, the ADU, one of the ADU conditions was get rid of two of those entrances. Let's just limit it to one. Of course, you're going to double the traffic on that and the traffic hazards, but that's still better than having three entrances.
Yeah. Strange results sometimes. I would also support taking getting that on the agenda and taking a good look at that and hearing what Scott's done on this.
Yeah, I honestly don't feel totally equipped to deal to have the discussion without him in the room, because I know he's run the numbers on it.
Right.
He's also fronting the requests for them.
The other part is that and the minutes for the May meeting were very good. Actually, I mean, I listened to the whole thing, and then
kudos to Amanda.
And then I looked at it, and it closely reflected the conversation. So it was useful. One thing I would find more useful would be to have them early and labeled draft and posted on the Planning Commission website. It makes it easier. Can't do that, huh?
Yeah. So I sent them out when they're ready. So they're coming late because they're done late. But posting a draft document to the external facing website puts a record out there that has to be tracked. We have no way of anyone can download it and have it, even if it says draft.
Okay.
There's no management of it, and
right.
we have retention, we have public disclosure requests. There's a lot that has to do with trying to really minimize the number unofficial or duplicate or almost duplicate records. So, I can commit to trying to get them out earlier and making the audio.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I noticed that the Board of County Commissioners puts out a draft agenda and draft, they don't put much in the way of minutes, but they do put out the draft agenda, just label the draft, and it's changeable.
Our agendas are out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that they maybe have more volatility in their agenda as it comes down.
It changes right up to the day of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you did bring that up at our last meeting, and Amanda and I did touch base on it to try to figure out, is there a way to do this? So.
And then the other thing has to do with Scott Diener, so I'll wait for him.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Can you make a note that we're gonna bring Scott to the next one, whether he likes it or not?
I'll forget about it.
All right. Well, if there is nothing else for the good of the order, we will adjourn. I see all nodding heads. I'm off the record.
Now we'll have to see how our new method of is working.
Not available.
Yeah.
Okay.